Okay, good evening to everybody. Let's just do that. Let's see if we can, let me get my Tanakh up. So tonight we, so if you recall last week, we actually finished, with a Perek Yutet in Melachim Bet, where the Bible told us about the great miraculous salvation of Jerusalem at the very last minute after Jerusalem had been encircled by Sanherib. This is already, probably a decade or so after Malchut Yisrael had been totally obliterated and had been the rest of the whoever was left was exiled. So it's at this moment that, 10 years later, Chizkiyahu had enough of being a vassal of Assyria, and together with probably, as we're going to see in this week's Perek, probably with outside help, he participated in all kinds of rebellions against Assyria. Right, if you remember the prism of Sanherib that we looked at last week, he mentioned, for example, that the king of Ekron, Paddy, had been enslaved by Chizkiyahu. Clearly, probably when he had started his rebellion, he had decided to take on a couple of the allies of Assyria in the city-states around Judea. And so he took over Ekron, which is, part of the Philistine territory, and probably wanted to make an alliance with Egypt and other allies to take advantage of whatever problems the Assyrian was confronting, and etc. So tonight we're going to look at a perek, which is very clear from the text, actually is out of order. It's very clear that this perek that we're about to look at, Perek Chaf, actually happened before Perek Yutet, or maybe during the middle of Perek Yutet. It's not exactly clear, but it clearly was at some point, and especially if you do the math, at some point it was before. So first, let's everybody get, and I'm going to get my Tanakh, get my Machon Mamre. My Tanakh, Perek, Chaf. Let's take a look. Yeah, Im Nikud. So Perek Chaf of Melachim Bet. And now, let's share that. Okay, so if we look at Perek Chaf, so the Bible tells us a story. Bayamim Hahem. And just to explain why would it be out of order, it's pretty straightforward. Chapter 18 and 19 are a retzef. They are a continuity. They are the story of the rise of the Assyrian threat to Jerusalem, the challenge, the coming of the representatives of Assyria to Jerusalem, the mocking of the power of Chizkiyahu and the mocking of the power of God. That's chapter 18. Chapter 19 is Chizkiyahu turning to Hashem, turning to Yeshayahu to intervene. And it concludes, of course, with the salvation of Jerusalem, which is parallel to kind of Yitziat Mitzrayim and all the parallels we talked about. So probably the author of Sefer Melachim didn't want to interrupt the retzef, didn't want to interrupt the continuity of the narrative. But it's clear that this story happens in the middle, and we'll see it as we look at the text. Now, the text tells us, "Bayamim hahem chala Chizkiyahu lamut." In those days, which is basically, again, in contrast to when something happens afterwards, you would say, "Vayi acharei hadvarim ha'ele," or something like that. "Bayamim ha'ei" means during that same period of time. that Jerusalem is fighting a battle against Sanherib, that Jerusalem was under siege for 3 years, as the text told us in chapter 18. All those things. So Vayavo Elav Yishayahu, so he's about to die. Now, there are, interestingly enough, there are three other stories in the book of Kings of kings who are going to die, and they interact with a prophet. For example, just to go back for a second, if you look at Malachim Aleph, Perek Yud Dalet, the Bible tells us, Ba'etahi chala avia ben Yeravam, the son of Yeravam gets sick, and Vayomer Yeravam liishto, go and do a tachposet and hide yourself and go to Achia and find out if he's going to live or he's going to die. And God told Achia that she was coming, and he says, Boi eshet Yeravam, etc. I have a very difficult thing to tell you. Lechi imri li Ravam, komar Hashem Elohe Yisrael, yana sherari moticha mitocha am, etc., etc. Because of this, but you didn't follow, your child is gonna die. Lachein ini mevi ra'al beit Yeravam, etc., etc. And that's exactly what happens. This child of Yeravam dies. He ba b'saf abayit v'hana'ar meit v'ikberu oto v'yispedu lo kol Yisrael. So we have a type scene in Malachim Aleph, Kings 1, chapter 14, of the son of a king who gets sick, and, or, you know, he was supposed to be the next king. There's an interaction with the prophet, and the prophet declares that he's going to die, and he dies. We have a similar story when we go to Malachim Bet, at the very beginning of Malachim Bet. The Bible tells us that Ahaziah, Vayivsham Moav b'Yisrael acharei mot acha, vayipol Ahaziah ba'ar hasvacha, he falls, vayachel, and he gets sick, and he sends, of course, unfortunately, he sends messengers to Ekron, etc., etc., which is the wrong thing to do. It's the right, you know, and then we have the whole story. And he goes to the, in the end, Eliyahu is told by God to go to the king. Komar Hashem, yana shashalachta malachim lidrosh bebal zavuv, hamibliein Elohim b'Yisrael, lachein hamita asher alita sham lo tired mimenu kimot tamut, vayamat kidvar Hashem, vayimloch yiroham tov. So the second story is exactly the same story. A king gets sick, he does the wrong thing, or he interacts with the prophet, and the prophet tells him he's going to die, and he dies. We have one more story like that, but not about a Jewish king. We have one more story like that previously in Malachim, in chapter 8. Basically, we have the story of Ben-Hadad. Vayavo Elisha Damesek, u-Ben-Hadad Melech Aram Chole, vayigadu lemor Baha Ish Elohim, vayomer Melech El Chazael, kach biyadcha mincha, v'leich likrat, v'darashta et Hashem me'oto lemor, ha'echye me'chol lize, will I live or die? Vayelech Chazael likrato, etc., etc. Vayomer elav Elisha, leich emor, lo chayo tichye, ki mot tamut. You're going to die, and which is exactly what happens. In the end, Chazael kills the guy, or maybe he doesn't kill the guy. We had the whole discussion. But the point is, he dies. So we have three stories previous to this story in the book of Kings, in which a king, we have the type scene of a king, both Jewish kings, non-Jewish kings, who are, get very sick. They are in big trouble. They turn to prophets, or prophets turn to them, and they're told they're going to die, and they die. In our story, interestingly enough, we have a similar type scene. Vayamim ha'im chalach hizkeo lamut. Vayavo elav Yishayo ben Amotz, vayomer lo komar Hashem, tzav lebeitecha, ki meit ata velo tichya. You won't live. It's the same model. And what we would expect is that's exactly what's going to happen. What we expect is stage number three. Stage number one, king gets sick. Stage number two, interaction with the prophet to find out, is he going to live or is he going to die? The prophet says he's going to die, and he dies. That's exactly what happens, except it doesn't happen, which is interesting because you have a degem here. You have a model of three, and then four is a charig. Four is different. The fourth time is in the outlier. This is a classic model. It's a classic model in Tanakh where you have three and then four. Three and then four. It's a classic model, and this is one interesting example, not in the same chapter, but across a book. We have three type scenes, exactly the same. Then the fourth one is an exception. And here too, Chizkiyahu, by the power of his prayer, seems to change his fate. Again, I'm not getting into the philosophical question of how does prayer work? Does God change his mind? Is it that Chizkiyahu is a different person? Whatever it is. But the point is, the Bible focuses here on the power of prayer of Chizkiyahu. Vayasev et panav el hakir, vayitpalel Hashem leimor, ana Hashem, zechorna et asher hitalachti lefanecha, be'emet ubelevav shalem, v'atov be'enecha asiti, vayev Chizkiyahu b'chi gadol. So you have, number one, he prays. Number two, he cries. And again, we have three key words here. Emet, and shalem, and atov beinecha asiti. So he was wholehearted, he was good, and he was truthful. He was loyal to God. Vayhi Yishayahu lo yatsa ha'ir. Yishayahu had not even left the city. Udvar Hashem haya ilav lemor. Shuv ve'amarta el Chizkiyahu negid ami. Kom Hashem Elohei David avicha. Shamati et tfilatecha. I heard your prayer. Ra'iti et dimatecha. So there was both prayer and there was crying. I heard your prayer. I saw your crying. Hinani rofelecha. On the third day, you will go up to Beit Hashem. V'hosafti al yamecha chamesh esrei shana. I will add to your life 15 years. Umikaf melech Ashur atzilcha. I will save you from the melech Ashur, which clearly indicates that this took place before melech Ashur had been defeated by the plague or by the intervention of God, ve'et ha'ir hazot, and this city of Jerusalem, ve'ganoti al ha'ir hazot l'ma'ani u'l'man David abdi. So it's a very interesting parallel. In chapter 19, you have the threat to Jerusalem, the national threat. You have the interaction with Isaiah to the prayer, which saves, you know, the interaction, as well as Chizkiyahu's prayer himself to God to save Jerusalem. God comes and saves Jerusalem. Here you have a kind of parallel. It's not a national threat. It's a personal threat to the king, which you could say is also a national threat when you have such a great king like Chizkiyahu, but it's a kind of personal situation. Once again, there's prayer. Once again, you have the character of Yishayahu Hanavi involved. And once again, God here promises to take care of him. Vosafti al yamecha chamesh esrei shana. I'm going to add 15 years to your life. Umikach melech ashur atzilcha v'tir hazot v'ganoti al harir hazot. I will protect the sea. L'mani l'man David avdi. Vayomer Yishayahu kechu dvelet te'inim. Take some, you know, a cake of te'inim, of figs. But now, it's interesting, Chizkiyahu says, Vayomer Chizkiyahu el Yishayahu ma'ot. He's not satisfied with this initial intervention of Yishayahu. And he says, I need a sign. Ma'ot kirpa Hashem li. Ve'aliti ve'yom ha'shlishi beit Hashem. What is the sign that this is not just a temporary solution, but this is going to be a total refuah, that God is going to be mirapeh? It's also interesting, the theme of Shechin, of course, reminds us of Yitziat Mitzrayim, of the Makot, which again connects us to the theme of the salvation of the city and the salvation of Chizkiyahu are a kind of redux of Yitziat Mitzrayim. And again, also the language of Rof of Yirpa, God promised, if you remember, God promised a very specific language after Kriyat Yamsuf. If you go back to Sefer Shmot, after the salvation of what we call Kriyat Yamsuf, we have the story at the end of Kriyat Yamsuf, we have the story that they didn't find water, and then they brought water, and he goes and he sweetens the water, and God says, Vayomrim Shamati Shmala Kol Hashem Elokecha Ve'Asher Beinav Taseh, Ve'ha'azanta L'mitzvotav Ve'shamarta Kol Chukav, Kol Hamachala Asher Samti B'Mitzrayim Lo Asim Alecha, Ki Ani Hashem Rof Echa. The very specific image that's used, the metaphor of God as the healer. And so here too, that's in the context of, if you listen to my voice, so then you won't be, you won't experience Mitzrayim. If you don't listen to my voice, then you'll experience the problems of Mitzrayim. And here too, God is, Hine rofe lecha b'yom ha'shlishi. Instead of having Shechin, you are saved. And he says, Ma'ot kirpa Hashem li. He wants to know what sign. Now, the sign also, why is Chizkiyahu so interested in a sign? And it could be that there's also an important theological play going on here. If one goes back to a couple of decades beforehand, if one goes back to the book of Yeshayahu, and one looks at the story of in chapter 7 with the father of Chizkiyahu, our good friend Ahaz, when he was under threat from Aram and Yisrael, before Yisrael was destroyed, and he was under threat because they wanted him to join their coalition against Assyria. And Yeshayahu goes to talk to Ahaz. And there, Yeshayahu, consistent with his approach to foreign policy, don't rely on other nations, but rely on God. Who do you ally with? Who do you rely on? And who do you ally with? Ve'amarta ilav, hishamer v'hashket al tira, be neutral. Ulevavcha yirach, mishnei zanvot ha'odim ha'ele, yan ki atzalecha amra'a, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Lo takum v'lo tiyeh, etc., etc. So Yeshayahu goes and tells him this, and Ahaz ignores it, because the text then says, Vayosef Hashem daber lachaz limor. God continued through Yeshayahu and said to him, She'al lecha ot, ask for a sign. Me'im Hashem Elokecha, hamek she'ala, something in the, you know, go deep or go up into the sky. And Ahaz acts very frum. Vayomer Ahaz lo esh'al v'lo anaset Hashem. I won't challenge God. Vayomer shim'una beit David, ha'ma'at mikem halaot anashim kitalu. Is it not enough that you burden people that you also, meaning don't play this game. God is going to give you an oath against your will. So, a couple of decades before, we had a similar type scene where the papa bear of Chizkiyahu, Ahaz, who was an evil king, a terrible king, who ultimately succumbed to becoming a vassal of Assyria and imported, as we saw, Assyrian culture, Assyrian avodah zarah, Assyrian religious behavior into the society. So he was challenged by the prophet, have a sign. Again, maybe because if he had a sign, then he kind of couldn't ignore it. But if you don't have a sign, I can make believe, I can ignore, you know, what happened. So he has a sign, but he doesn't want the sign. Here, Dafka Chizkiyahu, who is presented throughout the book of Yeshayahu and the book of Malachim and the book of Divrei Hayamim as the antithesis to his father, who was a terrible guy. So he does the exact opposite. So he does. He says, Vayomer Chizkiyahu Yeshayahu, on his own initiative, Ma'ot, what's a sign? Give me a sign. My father trabbed frumkeit and didn't want a sign. But I, in my humility, I want a sign. I want a sign for chizuk, to strengthen my emunah, to strengthen my belief, to help me. And he says, ma'ot vayomer Yeshayahu. So Yeshayahu says, zelecha ha'ot me'et Hashem, ki yaseh Hashem et hadavar asher diber, halo chatzel eser malot im yashuv eser malot. You know, again, the simple reading here is there was some sort of sundial, sun clock, and he basically says, you know, what's a bigger miracle that, you know, the sundial will go back 10 degrees or 10 units, or it'll go forward 10 units. Vayomer Yechizkiyahu nakel latzel lintot eser malot. It's easier that it goes lo chiyashuv atzel achronit etz esel eser malot. To go forward is easier, but to go back is a bigger chiddush. Vayikra Yishayahu nevi el Hashem vayashav el tatzel b'malot asher yardam malot achaz achronit eser malot. And again, it's called ma'alot achaz. This sundial, whatever, had been set up by Achaz, so it's a big shtach that Dafka with the ma'alot that Achaz had set up, Dafka with this sundial, God makes a miracle. And, you know, again, now according to the Ralbag, it's not like God changed the whole, you know, God changed the whole laws of physics and did something like that. That's not what happened. It's rather that, you know, there was God just brought a lot of clouds and a lot of shade or whatever and changed the situation in terms of that. Okay, this is the first half of the book. The second half of the perek. The second half of the perek is a flip side of this, meaning on the one hand, this showed Chizkiyahu in a very positive light and in a very great light. But Chizkiyahu also, at the same time, during the siege of Jerusalem, was probably very, very scared and saw this as very difficult. And so the Bible tells us while he was willing to interact with God and God was willing to interact with him and all these things, at the same time, there was an element of lack of trust in God. And so you have here the story, Ba'etahi shalach birodach baladan ben baladan melech bavel svarim uminchal chizkiyah. So the king of Egypt sent a delegation with books to Chizkiyahu. Ki shama ki chala Chizkiyahu. Now,
not the king of Egypt, the king of Bavel.
Bavel, my mistake. I'm sorry. The king of Bavel. And he sends him. Now we know from all of the extra biblical documents of the time that Bavel, which was much smaller kingdom than Assyria at this time, was fighting with Assyria. It was the beginning of what eventually it was a century long battle that would, you know, find its final resolution in like 609, in about, you know, 90 years later at the Battle of Carchemish, where the Babylonian army would defeat the Assyrians. And the Bible here, I mean, what's going on? Was there like a Bikur Cholim of Bavel that they went to visit Chizkiyahu? As almost all of the modern writers, both traditional and non-traditional, on this perek point out, it's clear that there's more that meets the eye here. It's not simply a convalescent visit of visiting a peer king. It's also to plan strategy that there would be an alliance of smaller states and smaller powers who would challenge the hegemony of Assyria. And so that's what happens here. Vayishma lehem Chizkiyahu, vayar'em et kol beit nechotat ha-kesev et ha-zavav et ha-bsamim et shemen ha-tov et beit kelav. He shows him everything. Why does he show him all these things? Probably, as a number of writers have pointed out, he probably shows him all these things in order to highlight the fact that there is great wealth that Chizkiyahu and Judea can provide resources to help the revolution, resources to help and the rebellion. And basically, they're beginning an alliance. Lo haya davar asher lo heram Chizkiyahu beveito b'chol memshalto. Yeshayahu, who's consistently against, reflects the meser hanivui, the prophetic message that he internalized from God, which was that the Jews, that Israel should, Israelites, Judeans should stay out of geopolitical as much as possible. They should remain neutral. They should not ally themselves neither with Assyria, neither with Mitzrayim, neither with Bavel. They came from a far off country. Now the term Eretz Rechoka is very evocative, because that's the term that the Bible uses in the Tochacha, in Parshat Dvarim, that a goy, Oz, will come, may Eretz Rechoka, from a very far off land. Remember, if you look at the map of Mesopotamia, Bavel is further than Assyria. Bavel is further than Assyria, further east than Assyria. So they're going to come from Bavel. There will be nothing left. So Yeshayahu basically hints to him that making an alliance with Bavel is a terrible mistake, and that basically this will ultimately entangle you in all kinds of issues, and ultimately it will come back to bite you, and eventually they will come and take everything in this, which is eventually what happened. They're going to take. Now, Chizkiyahu had one of two choices at this point. Chizkiyahu could have said, you're right, I'll break all my ties, etc. Or Chizkiyahu probably thought to himself, and that's, I think, the way you have to read his response. Vayomer Chizkiyahu Yeshayahu, Tov Dvar Hashem Asher Dibarta. I accept what you said. Vayomer Halo Im Shalom Ve'emet Yubiyamai. As long as during my time there'll be peace and strength and emet. I think you have to understand that as basically Chizkiyahu is saying, I can't worry about the long-term future right now. Jerusalem is surrounded. Assyria is threatening me. I have a tremendous, what's going to happen? And so in the midst of all this, he turned to make an alliance with Bavel. Now in the end, God himself saved Jerusalem, but the damage was done. I think it's also striking that I think it's kind of an ironic contrast. In the first part of the Perek, which presents Chizkiyahu in the best light, Chizkiyahu, he says, when he prays to God, he says, Ana Hashem zechorna et asher hitalachti lefanecha be'emet u'belevav shalem. Look and see how I went before you in truth, in loyalty, and with a whole heart. And v'atov be'inecha asiti, I did what was right in your eyes. But at the end of the prayer, in this kind of almost casual statement, it's again, it's a kind of, I think, shtach. Vayomer Chizkiyahu Yishayahu, tov devar Hashem. What God said is good. Same word, tov. But here it's a tov of resignation. Halo im shalom ve'emet, yu b'yamai. As long as there's shalom ve'emet in my day. So there's a kind of, unfortunately, there's a kind of resignation, and it's a reversal. Because if he really wanted to do what was tov and shalom and emet in God's eyes, he should not simply have accepted, okay, I'll get punished. The future will be punished, but the present will be okay. So I think there's something in terms of that irony. V'yeter divrei Chizkiyahu v'chol gvurato asher asa tabrecha v'tata'ala, how he made all the waterworks. Okay. As I said, I want to try to cover a little bit more ground. So let's go to chapter 21. Chapter 21 is the exact opposite of Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu had a son. Ahaz was a terrible king. He had a righteous son. Menashe is the exact opposite of Chizkiyahu. And Menashe, clearly, again, I think the way you have to read it is that there were different political factions, different political perspectives on what is the right policy to make alliances with Assyria, not to make alliances with Assyria, to make alliances with Bavel, not to make alliances with Bavel, to make alliances with Mitzrayim, not to make alliances with Mitzrayim. These are all issues that are going on. And it's clear that, you know, Menashe, I think Menashe was a king who probably wanted to, as we're going to see, he's probably the king who wanted to probably make once again the alliances with Assyria that his grandfather had made. Either because he was raised by the courtiers who rejected Chizkiyahu's approach, we don't know, but the Bible tells us explicitly, Ben Shtei Misrei Shana Menashe B'molcho, he was 12 years old when he became a king, which means that he wouldn't have been born unless God had intervened and gave Chizkiyahu another 15 years. V'chamishim v'chameish shana malah v'shalayim, he was king 55 years, the longest reign in the entire book of Kings. V'shem imo chevtziba. He was a terrible king. He built all the bamot that Chizkiyahu had tried to get rid of. He brought back. Every single avodah zarah he brings back. Ubana mizbechot bebeit Hashem. Asher amar Hashem b'Yerushalayim asim et shmi. Dafka in the place which God had said, I'll put my name. He built altars to other gods. Va'even mizbechot l'chol tzva Hashemayim. This again reminds us of Ahav, who built the mizbechot and basically turned the temple into something that was not used anymore because they basically adopted all the Assyrian ways, culture, religion. All the different sorcery, putting your son through the fire. Vayasam et pesel ha'asherah asher asa b'bayit. And he put the pesel ha'asherah in the Beit HaMikdash. Asher amar Hashem el David ve'el shlomo b'no b'bayit hazeh v'shlomo shmachayit b'no asim et shmi l'olam. V'lo osif lanid regal yisra min adamah shenatati. In that very place, which God had said, I don't want to take them away from this land if they keep the covenant. V'lo shameu. V'chol ha'torah asher tzivah utam avdi Moshe. V'lo shameu. V'yat'ein min asher la'asot et tarah min ha'goyim asher yishmir Hashem mipnei Yisrael. He basically directed, the national religion became a syncretistic religion. V'yidaber Adonai b'yarav adav ha'nevim l'mor, yan asher asa min asher melech yudah t'orvot ha'ele, ra'mi kol asher asor, v'yachati gam et yudah b'gilulah, Lachain komar Hashem Elohe Yisrael, hineni mevi ra'ah al Yerushalayim v'Yudah. So the text says explicitly, because of the sins of Menashe, and this is going to come up over and over again as we get to the end of the book, because of the sins of Menashe, Jerusalem will be destroyed. A terrible ra'ah, hineni mevi ra'ah, asher kol shom'av titzalna shtei oznav. That whoever hears, his ears, titzalna shtei oznav. If I'm not mistaken, I think in the book of Yirmiyahu, I think it's chapter 26. I think in chapter 26, you know, where he goes, and it says there, they want to kill Yirmiyahu. And he says, you know, you can kill me, etc., etc. They want to kill him. He says, you know, there were other prophets in the time, Micha, B'yimei Chizkiyahu, and he prophesied that if you don't, you know, do this, etc., 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 etc. I thought it was in 25. Okay, 26. But let's just see this. Titzalna. I'll just look up that word. Sorry. Titzalna. Titzalna. Shnei. Oznav. Where is that in Yirmiyahu? Titzalna shnei oznav. Let's see. Titzalna shtei oznav. Sorry. Titzalna shtei oznav. Yeah, so it's one is in Shmuel, but I think it's also in Yirmiyahu. One second. Yirmiyahu. Kol shom'av. Yirmiyahu perek yutet. Let's look at that. Right? So we saw, so Yirmiyahu. Let's look at that perek in Yirmiyahu perek yutet. Perek yutet. Right. So Yirmiyahu goes and says, Shimu dvar Hashem, komar Hashem tzvakot, inimi v'ra'al makom hazer, asher kol shomav titzalna, shtei oznav. That is the same language that Yirmiyahu uses. And he's also going to repeat the idea that it's because of the sins of Menashe. Is there a prophet interacting with Menashe? So here we don't have it explicitly, but probably there were prophets who interacted with him. Let's go back to our Malachim. So in this context, this Menashe, but the prophet here says explicitly, it doesn't say it's this anonymous prophet who speaks. Maybe it's Yirmiyahu. Maybe this is one of the reasons why the rabbis, because it has the same language. L'chein ko amar Hashem al Yisrael, hinni mevi ra'a al Yishalayim v'Yuda, asher kol shom'av titzalna shnei ozna. Whoever hears it, his ears will ring. V'natati al Yerushalayim et kav shomron. I'm going to bring the what happened to Shomron, which is destruction. Vet mishkolet beit Achav, and the scales of what happened to Beit Achav. Just like a plate is cleaned bare and then turned over. And then the text adds, "V'gam dam naki shafach menasha harbe ma'od." Now here again, what do you mean dam naki? Why? He wasn't Jeffrey Dahmer. Who's he killing? Ostensibly, he's killing political opponents. The people who had allied with his father and the political and religious outlook of his father probably were not happy with the changes in government policy, foreign policy, domestic policy, religious policy. And Menashe kills those people, just like in a few decades, they want to kill Yirmiyahu when he gives them Musar and when he tries to tell them what they're doing wrong and allying with Bavel is a mistake. And here too, they were probably being saying allying with Ashur is a mistake. Going to Egypt is a mistake. Going to all these things. The Gamdam Naki Shafak Nashar Bemot, Ara Shemi Leishlan Pelapel, Levad Mechatato Shirti Yuzal Asot Rabbi Hashem. The Yeter Divrei Menashev Chol Asher Asav Chatosh Haloim Ktuvim Al Sefer Divrei Yamim VaYishkav Menashe Im Avotav VaYikaver BeGan Beito BeGan Uza. Now this is very strange. He's a terrible king, and yet he dies a kind of peaceful death, and he's buried in his own house. VaYimloch Amon Beno Tachtav. And we don't know much about this Amon guy. Let me just read quickly. We have Ben Esrim Ushtaim Shana Amon B'molcho Ushtaim Shanim. This reminds us of Israel in the last few decades of its existence when there was constantly coups and there was kings for 6 months, there was kings for a year. This king is after a king for 55 years. You have the total contrast. You have a king for 2 years. V'shem imo mushlemet bat charutz v'yasar abnei Hashem kasher asam menashe aviv. Vayelach b'chol aderech sholach aviv, vayavod et agilulim asher avar aviv, vayazov et Hashem lo yavotav lo alach b'derech Hashem. Now here, the text tells us there was a rebellion, there was a counter rebellion. Vayikshiru avdei Amon alav, vayamitu et hamelach beveito. They kill him. So the infighting between the different factions, the pro-Assyrian factions, the anti-Assyrian factions, the pro God faction, the pro Avodah Zarah faction. And now there's a counter revolution to the counter revolution. Vayach Amaretz et kol hakoshim al chalom, vayamlich lo Amaretz et Yoshiyahu b'no tachtav. They go and they put Yoshiyahu, thinking probably that Yoshiyahu is going to continue the path of Amon, just like Menashe. The Yeter Divrei Amon Asher Asalom Tuvim Al Sefer Ravim Vayikvor Oto Bekvurato Beganaza Vayimloch Yosheo Beno Tachtam. The last part of the Shir, what I'd like to do is I want to show you something amazing, that when we read this, so if you just have Melachim, you get the impression Menashe is a terrible king, and he is. He's one of the worst kings. Chazal in the Midrash say there are three kings that don't have Chelek L'Olam Haba: Achav, Yeravam, and Menashe. And that's the impression one gets from Melachim. On the other hand, if one turns to the book of Divrei Hayamim, you get a very different impression about the end of his life. So if you look in the Chronicles, so if we go to Chronicles and we look at the latter chapters of Chronicles, So this is about Chizkiyahu. Let's get to Menashe. Right, this is still about Chizkiyahu. They love Chizkiyahu. He gets a lot of airtime. The destruction of Yisrael. And then we have the story of Menashe. All the bad things, etc., etc. Terrible, terrible, terrible. All the different things. This is a new story, which we don't have before. At some point, Menashe seems to have rebelled against the king, Assyria, and at some point they take him. When he was in trouble, chila, he got sick. He's almost like Chizkiyahu. Not chila is getting sick. He turned to God. He's like Chizkiyahu. Chilat pnei Hashem, vayichal. So in this version, Menashe becomes the Baal Tshuva par excellence. He gets rid of all the Avodah Zarah, and he dies. Everything that he did, and then he dies. Vayikberu beito vayimloch hamon b'nav tachta. So it's a very different picture that you get about the last part of his life. It's a very different picture that you get about the last part of Menashe's life. And this is one of the most classic examples. I have no, again, I wasn't there, so I can't tell you which of the Misorot, which of the traditions are more accurate. But it's not crazy to say that both are accurate. It's just the question is, why does one choose to include that last story, and one book chooses not to include that last story? And again, this is something that people come back to over and over again. Again, recently a very famous scholar in Israel passed away, Professor Sarah Yafet, or Yefet, and she wrote a classic book about called about Emunot Vedeot Bedivrei Hayamim, the theology and ideology of Divrei Hayamim, and she spends a lot of time showing what are the differences between various presentations of ideas in Divrei Hayamim as opposed to other books of the Torah, of the Tanakh. And she also highlights specific differences where the story is very, very different, the historical story. And she points out, it's very clear. If you look, again, I'm reading from the English a translation of her book. She writes, "The destruction of the kingdom of Judah is explained in Kings in two ways, articulated in the speech of chapter 21, the chapter we just studied. Jerusalem's destruction is caused by the sins of Menashe, and the destruction of the land and the exile, the product of the cumulative sins of all the generations from the Exodus until the present." So the theology of Malachim is, number one, of course, the sins of Menashe kind of top it off, but also you have the accumulated sins. It says it explicitly what we read in Malachim from the time of Yetziat Mitzrayim until now. God has been sending Nevi'im and the people ignored him. So, you keep You know, it's like being down by 30 in the fourth quarter and it's 2 minutes left. It's very hard to come back. It's almost impossible. And the Book of Kings is really, as I've mentioned a number of times, written by Yirmiyahu, looking back in retrospect, is trying to explain how did we go from the glory of the building of the Beit HaMikdash, Malchut Beit David, Malchut Shlomo, the great promises, to a situation of utter destruction, of almost hopelessness that Yirmiyahu confronts himself with. And the Book of Kings is a prophetic take on, unfortunately, the terrible leadership, the kings who led astray first Israel and then Judah, which led ultimately to the destruction of Israel and Judah. The book of Chronicles is a very different animal. The book of Chronicles is a second temple book. According to Chazal, it's written by Ezra and Nehemiah. It's written at a time when the Jews, right, it's 150, almost 125, 150 years after the Churban. It's already after the, probably, it's written at a time when the Jews are returning to Eretz Yisrael or hopes for the restoration of the Davidic dynasty. It's written at a time of there's a great potential. And so the Book of Chronicles will highlight the greatness of the Davidic dynasty and the potential to restore it. It will highlight things like the tshuva of Menashe, as even the worst king was able to come out of the muck and reassert the greatness of the Davidic dynasty, and that there's a possibility of returning, right? It presents that there's a return from Babel to Jerusalem in the time of Menashe. Okay? The option of rehabilitation is always available. And in terms of divine reward and punishment, while Malachim will highlight the idea that, so to speak, later generations also have responsibility for the past of what their fathers did, and it all accumulates. The Book of Chronicles is very similar to the Book of Yechezkel, which focuses very much on Ish Bechet'o Yumat, that people die because of their sins. And in the Book of Chronicles, what happens, the destruction of the temple is because of the last kings of Judea and what they did, Tzidkiyahu and Yehoyakim and all those. It's not because of what they did 300 years ago and not the sins of Menashe. And, okay?
How was Menashe related to Yeshayahu, and did he kill him?
There is a Midrashic tradition that Menashe killed Yeshayahu, because if you're going to look for somebody who's really evil and would probably not countenance somebody like Yeshayahu floating around, Menashe would be a good person, because it says he killed a lot of Dam Naki. He killed a lot of innocent blood. Yirmiyahu, when he's put on trial, says, you can kill me, but you're going to be killing Dam Naki. So Dam Naki, I think that's part of where Chazal got it from. That Dam Naki are people who are your ideological opponents, who are your religious opponents. And who's the biggest opponent would be somebody like Yeshayahu. That's what I assume. But I have no, there's no text in the text that connects Menashe directly to whatchamacallit. And
he wasn't his grandfather?
No, he wasn't his grandfather in terms of Pshuto Shel Mikra, in terms of the plain sense. And so, according to Sarah Yaffet and many others, I'm reading from an article, Second Temple Society felt condemned by the sins of the past. Our ancestors sinned and are gone, but we hear the way. Jeremiah already expresses a shift. The idea is the book of Divrei HaYamim wants to shift that conception and say that it's not too late, that we're coming back with Koresh. We've gotten the ability to come back to Eretz Yisrael, and we have the potential to restore the Davidic dynasty. It's a much more hopeful book as opposed to the book of Kings, which is a very almost fatalistic, not fatalistic, but pessimistic book because of what happened and the loss. And so Chronicles will report the punishment, the sins of Menashe, but also his tshuva. And this is the idea of the potential. Okay, Emir Tshem, next week, we will start the great narrative of Yoshiyahu, the great white hope, the last great white hope of the potential salvation of Jerusalem. We will do that, Emir Tshem, next week. I wish everybody a very meaningful Shabbat. I wish everybody a meaningful Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzma'ut coming up during these very, very challenging times. And I hope that it is meaningful in every way possible for you personally and collectively. And again, we have in mind the Chatufim, and may our tefillot be answered. Shabbat Shalom to everybody.
Thank you very much. Shabbat Shalom.
Shalom.
Wonderful.
Thank you.